This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like the Lombardi Line, you're going to love the GM Shuffle. Our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, gives his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the entire year. You can download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcast. Same thing with this show as well, downloadable in podcast form every single day, immediately following the program, as we welcome you back live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm with you. Great breakdown of yesterday's games in the first block. Now let's look ahead to the four games that we have coming up as the Sweet 16 rolls on, starting in Dallas with NC State and Marquette. NC State getting 7 in this spot. They are the lone double-digit seed remaining in the field. If there was one Cinderella to root for, it's them, but can they pull it off against Marquette?
No, I like Marquette here tonight. I laid the points. I mean, this was a top 10 team all year, and they had injury problems down the stretch, and then were they going to be a fade? They earned a 2 seed here in this tournament. I know Will Hill, who's going to join us later, is on the other side of this game. I thought you started to see signs of the fatigue against Oakland, and then they had to play an overtime game against Oakland, and they get the rest to come back on Friday now. But it's 7 big wins in a row for them that are all, you know, that are elimination games for their season. They had a run through the ACC, and I thought they played markedly worse against Oakland than they had previously in any of the other 6 games. So I think Marquette's uber talented. Look, Colorado played great. Yeah. Colorado played, matched them blow for blow. They rallied from double digits down. They just couldn't get there. I think Marquette gets to the front in this game and is able to widen it out. I just don't know that NC State has enough in the tank or enough shooters to beat Marquette.
And while DJ Burns has been great, might be the only mismatch the way he throws his body around down low, Tim Murray said something great earlier this week that they did get a warm up with Colorado's Eddie Lampkin, who's not small body, not the same, but not small. By the way, did you see the Rich Eisen clip with DJ Burns?
I did not.
It was, so I didn't see the whole interview and if they laughed it off or anything like that later, but he was talking about how he started growing and he was like, oh yeah, like I just grew out of nowhere, da 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 da. And Eisen goes, so when did you put on the weight? And he was like, sorry, sir. He's like, you know, when did you fill out? And it was such an awkward exchange. He's like, when I, you know, got to college. It was the whole thing. Neither here nor there. Great tee up, by the way. Will Hill is going to be joining us at the end of this hour. Get some of his best bets for the Sweet 16. Any futures options he thinks might still be available. And looking at some baseball with opening day in Major League Baseball coming through yesterday. Then in hour 2, Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. We'll talk to her a little NFL, Browns talk, plenty of NFL conversation throughout the show as usual. Any other thoughts, though, that you have here on this Marquette NC State game?
No, that's it. A little look at the total over, a little lean to the
over. Been a good bet.
Right? A little lean to over 151, but I like the side better in Marquette.
Yeah, I would agree. They've scored 87 and 81 points so far. Marquette has shot 62%+ against Colorado. My only question about this Marquette team is based on the teams that they've had to play. Only, like, they had that bad half against Western Kentucky. They have the 11-point lead that they let slip away. Even trailed Colorado for a second before they brought it back to win by 4. So my only question about them, I don't have a play in this game. What about Duke-Houston? So Houston, we know, great defense, physicality, but they do lack depth. And we saw that put to the test against Texas A&M late in this past matchup when they had 4 guys foul out. And it was interesting talking to Mike Somich on the program when he joined us earlier this week. I asked him, is that a concern about this Cougars team moving forward? And he said, if anything, honestly, it made him a little bit more encouraged about them because of the mental toughness and fortitude that they showed late. And he thinks that they'll be good in this spot against Duke. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because we've seen some sharp action on Duke and the public is on Houston here. Okay. This is kind of a dichotomy game. And the other one that's like that is Creighton, Tennessee, a little bit that we'll talk about as well in this segment. I feel like Duke is a talented enough team to go through here and win this region. And yet they have played no one like Houston. They have played no one that will defend them like Houston, will block them out like Houston. Houston takes good shots. I think that, you know, distinguishes them from some other teams. When you say that they, you know, the defense is better than the offense, I think Houston takes good shots. I don't know. I think this will be an interesting game. I have no opinion. This might be a spot I look to in game when I see how Duke is handling the Houston pressure and the Houston defense. but not ready to take a stand pre-flop here. I think it's a, you can make arguments both ways.
Houston, a four-point favorite. They're minus 105 favorite to win the South region. In my bracket, I did have them making it through and getting out of this. If, against JMU, Duke hit 14 threes. I don't think that's going to happen again. But the really good special thing about the Duke offense is like all of the different options that they have. So even if it's not Jared McCain's day like it was the other day, you have Kyle Filipowski, you have Jeremy Roach, you have Tyrese Proctor. So they do have options. I didn't feel particularly confident one way or another, but I think I'd probably lay it with Houston before I take it. So maybe I'm a loser in the pros versus Joes conversation here.
Well, not necessarily that one is better than the other, but James Madison is interesting because James Madison made Wisconsin look like a mid-major. And then like right away in that game when they played Duke, they looked like the small school, right?
Absolutely.
It looked like a mismatch right from the get-go. Filipowski can dominate games. I'm torn here. So I'm not involved.
Houston's had 7 quad one wins. Duke is 5-4 in those games. Their opponents so far, to your point, Vermont and JMU. I don't know. I don't have a bet either. I like Houston. And like I said, I have them coming out of this region in my bracket already. And I'm just going to kind of root for it, I guess.
Like both Carolina games, Carolina went wire to wire. Like they got the lead and Duke never really was able to make a push, never really threatened in those games. That's a little bit of a red flag to me.
How about Gonzaga, Purdue, the other one seed out here still remaining? This is another one I don't have a bet on in this game just because Purdue scares me a little bit at this point in the tournament. I think this game is critical for them to get over the hump. They're a 5-point favorite against the Zags. Gonzaga beat McNeese and a depleted Kansas team, so I'm not sure I have a great read on them.
You make a very interesting point about this being a very high-pressure spot for them because of the past failings, which not everybody, you know, is responsible for all those years, but last year, right? So this now becomes a spot of that would be great disappointment if they lost here before they could get to a regional final. You know, Kansas hung with Gonzaga for a half. That was a very good game back and forth. And I knew a couple of people that had laid the points with Gonzaga and I were a little concerned at halftime. And then, boy, they came out in the second half and just ran them out of the gym. I thought this Gonzaga team was going to be a down year for them. I wasn't, you know, for a while there, they were a bubble team, right? They were in like the last eight in. It lasts four in some of those, and they've come on strong. They played very well in the tournament. I just think it's so tough with Edie to defend.
Okay.
It's so tough to defend him. And a lot has to do with how close they're going to call the game. I think this number's about right. I lean Purdue here, but no play.
Yeah, they have the most dominant player in basketball, to your point. Beat Gonzaga by double digits in each of the last two meetings, last two seasons. So it would make sense for them to have success in this setting. I just don't know if I feel confident enough to put my money on it.
And it's in Detroit, which, you know, they had Indianapolis closer to their campus, obviously. But this is drivable for that. That was a decided home court advantage for Purdue in the first two rounds. A lot of fans there in Indianapolis, just as it was for Carolina and Charlotte. So I think you have to factor that in as well, that the crowd will be behind Purdue tonight.
Definitely Matt Painter's best opportunity to get to a Final Four. So let's see what they can do here tonight. Creighton, Tennessee. This Tennessee team led by Dalton Connect laying 3.5, total 145.5. Final spot in the Elite Eight on the line. This will be the last game of the day.
I think the best game of the day. Duke Houston could be terrific as well. I think this game is going to be a game where neither team will lead by more than 6 or 7, and it will come down to the final possessions. I think Creighton will be creative in the half court. Will Tennessee be able to beat a quality team? I mean, I think Creighton is considerably better than Texas. Yeah. Tennessee, remember last year, blew a 15-point lead in the second round as part of this history of tournament failings.
Yeah, we go from Matt Painter to Rick Barnes, right? Both have had their struggles.
Can they close it out here? I think that he hasn't had a score like Connect in a long time. They are really good in the half court defensively. I've watched a lot of Tennessee games this year. I bet them quite a bit. But Creighton is really good offensively, and he always has good, and they move without the ball. They pass the ball well, and they've always had good shooters with size. I think it's going to be a real good game. I would take 3. I haven't done anything. I would take 3.5 here because I think it's a one-possession game.
They're a slower-paced team. You mentioned really good offensively, really good from the three.
Yeah.
Tennessee's got a pretty good perimeter defense, though, too. I think they're top 30 in terms of three-point defense in college basketball. So it'll be an interesting back and forth, especially if Dalton Connect is off, because Creighton's got a good defense too. Like these are both top 30 offensive and defensive efficiency teams both ways. if Dalton Connect is a little bit off and Creighton's playing good D and they're hitting their shots, I think they're very live on upset watch. Plus 145 money line, but you lean +3.5.
Yeah, I lean +3.5 okay. here because I think it's that close.
All right, we'll see. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do today.
Have you made a bet on any of these four games yet?
The only bet that I have is the Marquette NC State game over.
Okay.
But that's all. Uh-huh. But that's just because that's been Marquette's game. It's like Marquette and Alabama. I was telling you before the show, Alabama, apparently, I didn't even realize this, and you know that they're a fast team, very offensive. 26-7 to the over this year?
And the totals are 170s.
Jeez. yesterday, it got bet up to 175. Still gets over 176.
Their game against LSU at Alabama was the fastest paced game I've ever seen.
Speaking of LSU, interesting comments from Brian Kelly yesterday about his former quarterback, Jaden Daniels. We'll get to that and more as we turn the page to the NFL next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use the promo code Lombardi when you sign up. That earns you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 right now. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line, getting back to a little college hoops action as we welcome in great friend of the show, Will Hill, on the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can also catch him on the Gambling Group Chat with the Bear Bets Pod and Chris Felico. What's going on, Will? How we doing?
What's going on? I have some breaking news. Major League Baseball, a game is about to start. I mean, you can't, I know, and Mike talks about this a lot, and you guys like to make fun of me for doing the schedule. You can't be dumber than baseball with their schedule. They're trying to grow the game. They want kids to watch. Here we are. It's a holiday Friday. Kids are off. You got a whole day. The only day games we have is because of a makeup games yesterday. So another situation, example number one bajillion of Major League Baseball dropping the ball. But I'm good. Good to see you guys.
Man, oh, Manfred. What will he do next? I mean, it's inexcusable, but we'll move on.
How bad was that yesterday morning, though, with the morning games that end up getting
postponed? First of all, remember they used to have, and so we'll talk Eastern time because that's where Will is, two games at 1 p.m., two games at 2 p.m., a game or two at 3 p.m., and then you'd have three or four. They had eight games at 4 o'clock starting, no backup plan for the outdoor East Coast games. I mean, they could have played this series in Milwaukee and had a dome at least. I know it's a central time. You could go on and on and on and on and on and on. And how will he screw up the Ohtani situation? That's what we can wait for this summer.
That's a whole different animal. Yeah. We don't need to go down that road yet. But Will, glad you're well, unlike myself, who, I mean, I already knew going into the SDSU UConn game yesterday that it was going to be rough, but losing by 30 was probably worst case scenario, that they just got embarrassed the way that they did. My big takeaway from yesterday is that UConn continues to be a bear, and it's going to take a lot to upset them. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, it's more of the same. I mean, this is really not the nature of this tournament. Even the teams that win it, I'd have to go back and look at that Florida run where they won back to back. And I guess that's the team you just draw the most natural comparison to. The tournament's not designed for this. It's sort of like the NFL where even if you win, like the Chiefs win, but it's close. And you don't go through a tournament where you have a 9-game stretch where you bury everybody. Okay, you bury the 16 seed. That's normal. Maybe you blow out the 8 seed in the next round. But once you get to the Sweet 16, the games are usually competitive. I mean, nobody's put a glove on them. At some point, if you're holding UConn futures, I guess the concern you have is at some point you just, I don't know, you shoot 4 of 23 from 3, Clayton gets into foul trouble. You just have an off night, but they might be so good or an off night, they could still win. Where, I don't know, these teams, they're hanging around San Diego State, they're playing well, they're making shots. It's a 4-point game. Next thing you look, and it's, you know, it's a 15-point game. So they're really good. They're really good on offense, on defense. They're well coached. This bracket broke where it's not the death sentence we thought it would be, where it looked like a gauntlet on Selection Sunday. It didn't play out that way. It's actually been a pretty soft path here to the Elite Eight, especially with Yale beating Auburn, which I think was the key. So look, I don't know if I'm dying to lay the 8.5 tomorrow, but it's the same thing every day, every game with these UConn spreads, where the spread opens, you go, boy, that's a lot of points, 14.5 or 14 against Northwestern. That's a big number. 11, 12 against San Diego State, that's a big number. Then the game starts, and guess what? It doesn't look like that big of a number once the ball finally tips off.
Well, let's get to tonight's game. The biggest spread is NC State catching 7 tonight. We're on the opposite sides of this game. I laid it with Marquette. I think that NC State was starting to show a little signs of the gas tank being empty against Oakland, although they got the job done and they get the break here. But you're taking the points with the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I'm torn between taking the 7 and the over. I don't like betting both sides of a game just because I don't know, I feel like you have to, everything has to go right. But I did bet a little over, and I did bet a little NC State plus 7. I didn't feel like this round, as good as the games are, I didn't feel like there were any massive edges with any of the lines. It's gone well so far. We'll see how tonight goes. I just think NC State with Burns as the big guy, I think you put four shooters around him, they're going to have success on offense because he's such a good passer. He's got such good instincts. He's got such good touch where I think there's a path here to have some success. Marquette's not a great rebounding team. Now, on the other side of the ball, it might be tough, which is why I like the over, because I do think with Kolick, they can get Burns out in space, make him play in space, put him in the pick and roll, and Marquette will have success on offense. So I think a high-scoring game. I do think NC State has enough shooting to hang in the game. So, look, we haven't seen a lot of this where the underdog doesn't win the game, but they cover. They either win outright or just get blown out. So maybe this is a scenario where Marquette wins the game by, I don't know, 4 or 5 points, and NC State hangs within the number. So small play on NC State, small play on the over as well. I think it should be a fun game, a lot of points.
We all like the over, so I hope that's a good omen and not a bad one. You do have an under, though, tonight as well in this Duke-Houston game. We obviously know that Houston's known for their defensive prowess. How will they hold out? What do you think will happen tonight when it comes to that one?
Yeah, another game where I like both the side and the total. I'm sort of torn on how to play it. I do like the under here. I just think both teams play slow. Both teams play in the half court. Neither team's going to look to run. I like the fact for Houston. This is why I lean towards Houston in the game. You could figure out how to play it, whether it's just money line. You know, you could parlay Houston on the money line with UConn, get that to about even money. Maybe that's a way some people do it. I know you got to make sure you're getting the best of the number on both scenarios, but look, I just think it's a half-court game. It's an under game, and I like the fact that it's in Texas because Houston is so dependent on the officials. You can call a foul or not call a foul on every play with them. It's almost like holding in the NFL, and I do think, and this will be interesting because everyone says, oh, Duke always gets every call, and I do think sometimes there's something to that, but I don't know that they're going to get every call in Houston. I think it'll be a favorable whistle for Houston. I think the refs will let them play, and I think that's a big advantage. I just think they're too tough, too physical, too strong for Duke. I think you can bully Duke a little bit. We saw them against North Carolina where they were just out physical at the time. So I like Houston to win, and I do think this is an under. This is probably my favorite bet of the night is the under in this game.
Gonzaga Purdue from Detroit tonight. You have a first half play on this game, Will.
I like Gonzaga, but I think you have to have a concern if you're betting the full game with the Zags that they just run into foul trouble because they are a thinner team. They can't afford, speaking of a game where the whistle is so important, they can't afford to get into foul trouble with their bigs. I do think EK and Huff can hang with Edie for a half. I mean, we saw him play earlier in the season. Gonzaga was up by 5 at the half, and then Purdue just ran him over in the second half. So this, if you like Purdue, maybe live betting, maybe second half. I do think Gonzaga can hang in for a bit. I'm worried about the depth of the team and hanging in for the full 40 minutes. But I like the fact that Gonzaga's seen him twice now since last Thanksgiving. They played last year. They played this year. What's interesting, too, Gonzaga's been shooting the ball really well from three. In that first meeting, Gonzaga was 6 of 32 from three. And they've really shot the ball well here for a month, 6 weeks. So if they can hit their threes, I think they can do enough to disrupt Edie. I think they can hang in for a half. I worry about the second half.
VSiN's Will Hill, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. We mentioned the spread in that UConn-Illinois game being 8.5. Clemson-Alabama sitting at 3 most places right now, total 164.5. Anything that intrigues you in that game coming up in the Elite Eight?
I am actually going to take the under on an Alabama game, which is not going to be a pleasant viewing experience for me tomorrow. But this is an interesting cat and mouse game from a matchup standpoint because Clemson plays big. They play too big. So I think in order for Bama to compete defensively, they're going to have to go big, and that will take some shooting off the court. So that would lend me to an under. I do worry, like with Clemson, is this really good defense they've played, or is it just they've gotten a little bit lucky here? I think their opponents in this tournament are like 13 of 75 from three. Their opponents cannot make a three. Again, is that forcing the right guys to shoot? Is it forcing tough looks, or is it just some luck? Probably a combination of those things. So, boy, I would lean towards Bama in the game. I'd probably just play it on the money line if I liked it, but I do like the under. And I'm not a big trends guy, but the Elite Eight games have trended under. Historically, you do pretty well, which makes some sense. You got a trip to the Final Four on the line. You know, maybe you get a little tight on offense, your max intensity on defense. So It's going to be an under. It's not going to be fun for me, but I'm going to play the under here. I think I just think Bama has got to go big and take some shooting off the court to match Clemson's size.
I was going to say that's a brave under when Alabama is on the court. That's for sure.
Tough watch. You got that right, yeah. Will. All right, let's get you out of here on some baseball. Next game, first pitch, is going to be in Philadelphia. Also rained out yesterday. Strider against Wheeler. Braves against Phillies. You've got Strider under 8.5 strikeouts.
Yeah, fun game. I'm excited to watch this one. Great pitching matchup. There's a little rivalry developing with those teams. Same division. Phillies knocked them out and upset them in the last two postseasons. I just think 9 strikeouts for an opening day. I mean, we're not even April. That's a lot. I don't know that they're building in the usage enough. Again, it's Strider. He's awesome. He could strike out, 12 in the first 5 and I lose my bet. But I was trying to find a definitive number. I think he got as high as like 78 pitches in spring training. And they usually don't stretch these guys out by more than like an increment of 15. So max probably 90 pitches. I could see if, 84 pitches after 5 innings, does he come out for the 6th? Maybe, maybe not. I just think 9's a lot this early in the season. These teams are very conservative with their pitchers. It's a long season. Again, we're not even in April. So expecting him to go out there and throw 105 pitches and strike out 9 or 10 guys, I'm going to hold my nose here and take the under.
Well, I know you don't like the schedule, but how'd you do yesterday? Day 1, how was it?
It was good. Nice little comeback. That was a good win for the Yankees. Now, Yankee fans are saying, where was one of those wins in Houston in 2017 or 19 when we could have gone to the World Series? That was a good win. Soto threw the guy out at the plate. That was a shaky decision to send him. But Yankees have an issue with closer. Holmes, you cannot trust Holmes. He's an untrustworthy individual.
Great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you. Thanks for having me.
Will Hill. Follow him on X at not the Will Hill and download the Shoulda Bet More podcast wherever you get your podcast. We're going to hit the break, resetting with hour 2 when we come back. We got a good blend, football, basketball, baseball, all the things. Stay with us on the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rolling along on this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, Mike Palm, in for Michael like he is every Friday as we welcome you in live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Lots to get to over the course of the next hour in about 30 minutes. Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer are going to join us as we get into some NFL storylines, specifically honing in on the Browns. We got lots of college basketball, women's college hoops as well, and other news items. I did want to start here, Mike, with one thing because we talked so much in hour 1 about these young quarterbacks in the upcoming draft class. One thing I failed to mention when we were talking about the teams that might need or might grab a quarterback in the first round was the Giants. Giants owner John Mara didn't rule out taking quarterback. He said, quote, if they fall in love with the quarterback and believe it's worth pick number 6 or moving up, I would support that. Your thoughts there with the Daniel Jones contract and everything around it?
Well, I think they are looking for a quarterback, aren't they? They made that decision to re-sign Jones, and I know Michael spoke out about it at the time and his close relationships with the front office there in New York. But certainly they don't think the Italian kid is the answer for long term, right? I mean, he's a nice story and a feel-good story with the mom and all that. But they are in need of a quarterback. I don't know how far they are away, though. If they get a quarterback, where are they, right? I mean, this is a rebuild for this franchise. I mean, and you look at their history in the last, 6 years? They're the bottom 3 in the NFL in wins. They're far away here. They're far away. You can make the argument the Redskins are, Commanders, football team, whatever they are. The Washington team, much closer to maybe having a shot and being competitive with Philly and Dallas. New York is not. Now Saquon's gone. I get it. Maybe this is the time to draft the kid and develop him as you're building your team around him. It would make sense to me. Daniel Jones is not taking them anywhere.
The Tommy DeVito experience, to your point, was not it either.
Just entertaining. I mean, it was entertaining.
It was fun.
Right?
It was fun while it lasted. My follow-up to this is something I asked Michael about yesterday, and I already know your thoughts on Drake May, but because Brian Daboll had so much success with Josh Allen, and May is constantly compared to, body type, Josh Allen 2.0, could that be a guy that they like? They were at his pro day yesterday.
Yeah, but it's... not a body type. The runner, not the runner that Allen. Allen got a lot.
700 yards on the ground last season.
Yeah, but also some of that's designed run, not what Allen does, scrambling. I would say this. Allen got a lot better. He was developed very well to that point. He was not that accurate at Wyoming. I remember they played Iowa. I watched him. I didn't think the kid was anything that great. Now, obviously, he's a tremendous talent. They haven't been able to get over the hump. But, I mean, he's right there amongst the top three or four quarterbacks in the game. I guess that's an interesting point about development, because I know at one point Michael said, I don't know if there's anybody that's made a bigger leap in their accuracy as a passer from where they came into the league after or after year one going forward than what Josh Allen did.
And that's not usually one of the areas that you can develop and get a guy better.
All of a sudden became very accurate. That's what I say a little bit about Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the things. You can work with him on his reads, though. You can work with him on getting him to get the ball out quicker. Just it's hard to get him the pass just to be that much more accurate.
Giants quarterbacks in 2023. So that's Tyrod Taylor as well included in that with Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about it.
34 total QBR, 29th in the league. Worst QBR by a team in any season since the metric began. Any Giants team since the metric began in 2006. They were 27th in yards per attempt, 26th in touchdown to interception ratio, and 85 total sacks taken. It was rough. The Giants.
What was Tyrod's individual QBR?
I don't have that pulled up right now.
I would assume it was the highest. It was above it was above the 34 average.
I'm sure it was.
He gave him a chance to win a lot of games. I'll tell you that. They should have won that game in Buffalo. And Dabo kind of scapegoated him at the end on the goal line. But, I mean, I thought he always gave them the best chance to win, more than Daniel Jones.
I see his rating 89.1. I can't pull up the
QBR.
It just flashed at me. But the Giants minus 175 to go with a wide receiver with their first selection in the draft, plus 130 if you think they go quarterback. I want to get it here because I have the page pulled up. My internet is just hating me with a deep burning passion. QBR 47.7. So far better than the 34 total, but not a big leap. Let's go to the NBA here real quickly, because Draymond Green was ejected earlier this week, less than 4 minutes into the Warriors game against the Magic, had that pair of technical fouls, chirping the official endlessly. He explained himself on his podcast yesterday. Here's Draymond Green.
I said what I said. I deserved to get kicked out at that point. And what I said, if I'm all the way honest with y'all, I kind of was trying to turn my body and angle and go to the bench. And I said what I said, like a little too soon before angling my body to the bench. We need to win games. So, like I said, not going to overreact like, oh, man, like stuff is never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems. Like, I know where I am. I understand what I'm doing moving forward.
But what did he say? Let's get to what we want to know is what did he say?
Where's the mic'd up?
He said he deserved to get thrown out. I wonder what he said. Can you find that in the official's report that they turn into the league?
I don't know.
I think you like the NFL.
I know post game the guy that came out and spoke representing the officials said it was awful. So
I'm sure it was really awful. And maybe he'll get suspended if it was that awful.
My thing is, like he says, needs to be the exception, not the rule. But knowing Draymond Green, it is the rule.
Yeah, you're right.
It is. And especially with this Warriors team where every game is so important right now, that's got to be frustrating. I know they're minus 3,000 to be in the play-in.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the standings. They're only one game up on the Rockets for that final play-in spot right now. And Houston's on a 10-game win streak.
And you pull for the Rockets. I want to see the Rockets get in.
And I know they have the tiebreaker over Houston right now, but they still have one more meeting together coming up next Thursday, which will be huge. Houston, to your point, plus 450 to make the play-in, while the Warriors are minus 3,000.
You're going to take a shot with Houston?
I don't mind that.
Do it.
Maybe I will.
Send it in.
Send it in, Jerome. Make the playoffs, the Warriors plus 285 to miss minus 370. But like, I don't think they have a chance to make the actual playoffs. If they make the play-in, that's one thing. The playoffs are another. They have to win two games on the road.
Well, if you like Houston, they might, you could lay the 375 too. I mean, they won't even be in the play-in. Are the Lakers going to be in the play-in? The Lakers will be, right?
Yeah. Nine.
You give that a nine. And what is their odds to get into the actual bracket? Minus, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like minus 1,800, I think. Like, it's crazy. Anyways, I just thought that was interesting. If there was a bet to be made, like, I don't mind Houston. That 10-game win streak, won 12 of their last 13. If they keep winning, they're only a game back of Golden State right now. Warriors all the way out.
I really like Denver. I really like Denver to win it all.
Yeah, they're going to be awesome.
I really liked it.
Denver, I have a fun... later on in the show, we're doing Does Palm Have a Qualm?
Oh.
And I have an NBA future that I'm curious about.
Okay.
So we'll get there. Let's talk a little opening day, though, yesterday, because there's a really funny moment yesterday. Stephanie Kamerschak, who is usually our producer on the show on Fridays, she and her husband. Well, no, it's mostly her husband. Her husband's a big Angels fan. So they're texting about the game yesterday. And he texts her immediately, Mike Trout, first inning home run. This team is so bleeping back. Her response, no hesitation. Trout, first inning home run. Angels lose 11-2. And that was at noon, like right as the game was getting started. What happens? The Angels lose 11-3.
Sandoval couldn't get out of the second. Yeah, it was ugly right away for them.
It's just happening all over again for the Angels.
Trout, Otani, Rendon, right, who hasn't produced since they got it, but and nothing. Still nothing. They still haven't played a meaningful game past July. And how long? It's pretty amazing. Trout's homer was awesome. I didn't know if it would get out. It was such a deep part of the park, but it was over quickly. Sandoval had runners on immediately. Were you on the text or she screenshotted and sent
no,
it?
No, her husband screenshotted it and posted it on Twitter.
Oh, he did.
Because in the first inning of the game.
So he posted it then?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying. That's like, just, what's it like to be an Angels fan and have your season over before it begins? I feel
here's what was interesting to me yesterday is there were 26 starting pitchers and the average number of career wins for those 26 starting pitchers was 41. Like, it's so many opening day starters, your ace. It's a lot of guys that are in their third or fourth year are now the aces on these staffs. I know you didn't get Wheeler, who would have added to that total. Darvish had the most wins of anybody that started. And then I think Berrios was second and Nathan Eovaldi was third. A lot of overs yesterday. There were a lot of runs scored in these games. It was a good pitching matchup in Chicago. I thought was the best game of the day. If you like pitching, Tarik Skubal and this Crochet guy, who I asked Frank Thomas about because I don't know a lot about him. He had Tommy John. He came back from Tommy John. He throws 100. He was a reliever last year. They're stretching him into a starter and he got the openings to start. And I mean, he lost 1-0. So, interesting guy to keep your eye on as you move forward. So we're early. It's like hard to even pay too much attention because of everything. I'm also very focused on the NHL. There's these great cup playoff races. The NHL, I mean, right now. Like last night, we've got two Sweet 16 games. You've got a handful of Major League Baseball. They've got college hockey. And like, where are you going to squeeze in the NHL? We got some very compelling races for the playoffs and seeding here.
I was going to say that, and I know you're interested in the women's NCAA tournament too.
The side of it.
It's like there's a lot going on right now.
Those markets are obviously much softer than the very liquid markets that we're betting into with basketball here.
I know we only have a minute here, but do you like any of the games today?
I bet Texas after the first round was over at 20-1. I think Vic Schaefer's really good. They got a couple of bigs. He's very good coaching. He won a title at Mississippi State. They won't turn the ball over. They're going to defend you in the half court. I think nobody's talking about them. They got the last one seed, and nobody's talking about them. They could be sneaky. And I know, Sy, you're going to have to play a great game to beat South Carolina. But I like the value. And if we get to the Final Four, we can make money off the ticket.
How crazy is it that South Carolina, going into the Sweet 16, is minus $1.50?
Yeah.
Like, that's how good they are.
And they got beat last year. And they got beat in the semifinals last year by Iowa. They're very, very good. And Tennessee had them beat and let them have a wide open three at the top of the lane of the SEC tournament.
I'm excited for all of the teams remaining because in women's basketball, like it really is the cream of the crop at the top. Yeah. And that we have UConn and LSU and Iowa and Caitlin Clark and all. It's a really, really fun women's tournament this year. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, we'll go back to the men's college games. Two Elite Eight games are set. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today is the final day to sign up on our VSiN Pro annual subscription where you can get your first year for only $199 instead of the usual $240 price. All you need to do is use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you pro access to everything we do for the entire year. Daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game and round of the tournament as it rolls on. Remember, this offer expires today. Sign up now, vsin.com/subscribe, and use that promo code Lombardi. Back here on the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Palm in for Michael today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line is Mary Kay Cabot, Browns beat reporter for Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer at Mary Kay Cabot on X. Still lots to unpack, I'm sure, from the owners' meetings in Orlando earlier this week. There really is no offseason, is there, Mary Kay?
Oh, my goodness. There really is not. There are like 2 weeks in June where you sort of feel like you can slow down a little bit, maybe go on vacation. I'm actually coming back out to Vegas again in July, so looking forward to that. But for the most part, there's really not a whole lot of downtime.
Mary Kay, I want to ask you about the quarterback situation in Cleveland and sort of the pecking order. I thought it was very interesting last year that I thought the Browns very early anointed DTR as the successor to Deshaun Watson. I mean, PJ Walker played 3 games. They went 2-1, and they're away from a deflected interception in Seattle and going 3-0. Yet he gave way to Thompson Robinson, who maybe was in a little earlier than he was ready for. I thought they would not sign Joe Flacco because DTR would be the quarterback in waiting if Deshaun faltered. But then they went out and signed Jameis Winston. Explain, from a Cleveland Browns organizational perspective, where the pecking order is with their quarterbacks.
Well, obviously Deshaun is number one. Then you've got Jameis number two. And then it will kind of be between Tyler and DTR for number three. And we'll have to see how that all plays out. I do know that the Browns love DTR. They were very happy with what they got from him last year, even though, as you mentioned, he was kind of thrown in to the fire a little bit, really wasn't ready to start that game against the Baltimore Ravens here in Cleveland. But he came back, he beat the Steelers, and he did some nice things. So I know they really think very, very highly of DTR, and it's really just a matter of how this all shakes out in the preseason.
I know having to go through 5 quarterbacks last year was a lot, and so they wanted that support in the quarterback room, but I feel like a lot of people were surprised that they did bring in as much as they did, but because of Deshaun Watson coming off the injury, that raised a lot of questions from fans about his readiness and availability to be ready come training camp and for week one of the season. I know you have an article up now, I think it just came out yesterday, on this situation. What can you share about the team's confidence in Watson right now?
Well, first of all, 4 quarterbacks is not really unusual at this time of year or even throughout training camp for the Browns, because they had 4 last year as well. So that really shouldn't be raising many red flags. They like to develop quarterbacks, and they like to maybe keep one around on the practice squad for a while and whatnot and have an extra camp arm. So that really isn't sounding off any alarm bells or anything like that. In terms of Deshaun, they feel really good about where he's at right now in his rehab. He just started throwing last week for the first time after 4 solid months of rehabbing. He had the fractured shoulder socket repaired. And the thing about this injury is there's no precedent for it. I cannot find another NFL quarterback, at least in modern times, that has had this surgery. So you can't really say, oh, well, this guy came back in 6 months and he was totally fine. There's nothing. I mean, he's going to be blazing his own trail with this. But fortunately, he has one of the best shoulder surgeons in the world that operated on him. And everybody's super optimistic about the way that it's going right now, and that they believe he will be starting the season in September.
Mary Kay, I think many around the football world were surprised that Mike Vrabel did not land a head coaching job immediately once the offseason started. But Cleveland has adeptly brought him in to be a consultant, a player and coach consultant. What kind of impact will Mike Vrabel have on this team in the coming year?
These guys are so excited to have Mike Vrabel here. Of course, he's right from Akron, Ohio. He was a Browns fan growing up. He went to Ohio State. So he's got all the local roots and those things like that. But he's a great pair of eyes to have in terms of personnel. And then also on the coaching side, why wouldn't you want someone like that around who's been a head coach, who's been successful, who's been an NFL coach of the year? You don't get to be NFL coach of the year unless you're really good at your job and you're really smart at what you do. So they are excited to use him as a resource, again, both on the personnel side and on the coaching side, and it will evolve. They don't expect to have him around very long because they believe that he will get a head coaching job after this season.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind either. Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, Browns beat reporter. Coach of the year reigning is Kevin Stefanski right now. And I know he and GM Andrew Berry have been going through some contract negotiation extension talks. What's the latest from your perspective?
Well, when we talked to Browns owners, Jimmy and Dee Haslam at the meetings, they said they're close to these extensions. These guys are excited about it. That's great. It's good for Cleveland. There's stability finally in the front office and on the coaching staff. That hadn't been around for a long, long time. So to have these guys moving forward together, I think it's really great, and they will move closer to their goal of trying to win a Super Bowl.
Mary Kay, you have a very interesting role in addition to covering the Cleveland Browns. You're one of only 50 people that vote on the NFL Hall of Fame, one of only four women that last count. Maybe it's more now. Can you describe when you consider head coaches for their Hall of Fame, whether they're Hall of Fame worthy or not, how important is it factored in Super Bowl titles versus number of wins and longevity? And the second part to this question is, for a person to get into the Hall of Fame, is it very important for them to have an advocate or someone important in the game really pushing them in order to get them in?
Well, certainly it helps if you have really great people that are willing to go to bat for you and do a lot of PR for you and get emails and statistics and things like that. I do think that that is helpful. And you see that happening a lot when it comes time to start voting. But in terms of Super Bowls, yes, for a coach, I think Super Bowls do matter. I think that's the pinnacle of your career. And you have to have one or two of those, I think, for the most part, on your resume if you want to be an NFL Hall of Fame coach. So those are, you know, that's one of the biggest criteria in my mind.
When it comes to the AFC North right now, it appears to be the toughest division in football on paper with how good these teams have become. Where do you view the Browns in that pecking order right now?
That's a great question. It is such a good division. It really is. And if I had to pick a division winner right now, I think I would struggle to do it because any one of, I think, at least three, the top three teams could win the division. But you can never really count out those Pittsburgh Steelers. And now, of course, we know that they've got Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. And the competition should bring out the best in both of those guys. So Mike Tomlin never has a losing season. And they make the playoffs in years when nobody believes that they will. So I think really it is the toughest division in football. In terms of where the Browns are right now, it's all going to come down to how does Deshaun Watson come back from this shoulder injury, which, as I mentioned, is very rare. It's a rare shoulder injury and surgery. And these guys absolutely believe that he will come back healthy, but that's going to be the key to the season. If he does come back nice and healthy, I think they should be right up there, and I think they will challenge for the AFC North title. And not sure they're going to win it, but I think they will be one or two.
Mary Kay, the Browns went out and got Jerry Jeudy, whose value might have been, you know, if taken across the league, taken a hit since his, you know, he was drafted and so far in his NFL career. And then they locked him up for 3 years. Why the excitement? Why the demand from the Browns for Jerry Jeudy?
Well, they've had their eye on Jerry Jeudy for a long time. They really liked him coming out of the draft in 2020 out of Alabama. And I think they feel like he hasn't been able to reach his potential yet. I think they believe that once they pair him with Deshaun Watson and get him into some stability and give him some new life and some new eyes on him and some guys that really believe in him, I think they feel that he will flourish and reach his potential. So they actually have him through 2027, which is 4 years from now. And they believe that they will probably get some Pro Bowls out of him.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but can you help me figure out what happened with the defense last year where they were so good at home and then struggled the way they did on the road?
Wow, that was really incredible. In terms of, I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they played better quarterbacks on the road than they did at home. They got a few breaks at home in the quarterback realm. And we'll see how that goes this year because they have quite the tough lineup of quarterbacks coming into Cleveland next season.
Mary Kay, we so appreciate your time, and I hope you do get a little bit of vacation.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
It's Mary Kay Cabot. Make sure you check out her work, The Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Follow her on X at Mary Kay Cabot. When we come back, we're wrapping up today's edition of The Lombardi Line. Does Palm Have a qualm. We'll be right back.